You're listening to an Airwave Media Podcast.
Hey, it's Motley Fool Money co-host Dylan Lewis here. If you're listening to us, it's because you love following the stock market and learning about business stories. If you're looking to keep learning and unlocking your potential, then you should check out the Think Fast, Talk Smart podcast produced by our friends over at the Stanford Graduate School of Business. Think Fast, Talk Smart is the Webby Award-winning Best Business Podcast that's received nearly 43 million downloads and is the number one career podcast in 95-plus countries, so you know it's worth your time. Each week, host and Stanford lecturer Matt Abraham sits down with experts to discuss the best tips to hone and develop your communication skills, from making small talk that leaves a big impression, to keeping your nerves in check while speaking, to being more persuasive. Whether you're working on your elevator pitch or planning an important meeting, strong communication skills are important in business and life in general. That's why you'll hear from pros like neuroscientist Andrew Huberman on how to manage speaking anxiety, as well as speechwriter, best-selling author, and friend of the Fool Dan Pink on how to take risks in your communication, and psychologist Kelly McGonigal on how to harness nervous energy to fuel powerful presentations. All that and so much more available on the Think Fast, Talk Smart podcast. So what are you waiting for? Listen every Tuesday, wherever you get your podcasts or on YouTube.
As a longtime foreign correspondent, I've worked in lots of places, but nowhere as important to the world as China. I'm Jane Perlez, former Beijing bureau chief for The New York Times. Join me on my new podcast, Face Off, U.S. versus China, where I'll take you behind the scenes in the tumultuous U.S.-China relationship. Find Face Off wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey everyone, thanks for joining me today on Her Money. So I've been so excited about this conversation for a while because I have been a fan of Kim France, who was the editor of Lucky Magazine and before that was a writer at Sassy Magazine. I don't know if any of you remember Sassy, but I remember Sassy quite fondly. Today, she writes a phenomenal Substack all about how to dress. And she is a wizard when it comes to budgeting for your closet. We're going to go over how to determine what your fashion goals are, whether that's living a minimalist fashion lifestyle or simply updating your look, and why the get rid of everything you haven't worn in a year rule doesn't work for everyone. It definitely doesn't work for me. But before we jump into the interview with Kim, let's get into some news. Last week, two huge jackpots. The Powerball, which as I speak this is at $865 million, the fifth largest in history, and the Mega Millions, which was won at over $1.1 billion. They both sent people rushing out to buy lottery tickets for the very, very slim chance of becoming multimillionaires or even billionaires. You can't win if you don't play, right? Look, we all know the grim stats here. The odds of winning the lottery are about 1 in 300 million, and the bigger the jackpot, the lower the odds. But hypothetically speaking, what should you do if you unexpectedly win millions of dollars, or even if you get a few thousand back in your tax refund? First, take a breath. Do nothing. Even if you're deep in debt, just give it a sec before paying off your credit card. Don't rush into any decision until you've had a chance to look at your big picture finances and think about all of the line items on your list. For example, depending on interest rates, it might make more sense to let your money make some money rather than paying off low interest rate debts in full. What you should do in the interim is park the money. Park it in a high interest rate savings account. If it's a large sum, park it in a number of high interest rate savings accounts so that you can make sure that you're maintaining FDIC protection, and come up with a plan with a tax professional and financial advisor in hand. And if you are buying a lottery ticket this week, courtesy of the Hunger Games, may the odds be ever in your favor. And now we're going to take a quick break. Hey, everybody, it's Jean. If you want to continue unlocking your potential, then you should also check out Think Fast, Talk Smart, produced by our friends at Stanford Graduate School of Business. Think Fast, Talk Smart is the Webby Award-winning best business podcast that received nearly 50 million downloads. It's the number one career podcast in 95 countries, so you know it's worth your time. Each week, host and Stanford lecturer Matt Abraham sits down with experts to discuss the best tips to hone and develop your communication skills, from making small talk that leaves a big impression to keeping your nerves in check while speaking to being more persuasive. Whether you're working on your elevator pitch or planning an important meeting, strong communication skills are critical to business. All that and so much more is available on Think Fast, Talk Smart. Listen every Tuesday wherever you get your podcasts or on YouTube. We are back with my interview with Kim France of Girls of a Certain Age. So I've got two questions today about the clothes in your closet. Number one, how much of your money do you spend on them? And number two, how much of your time? Look, there are plenty of statistics around when it comes to getting dressed. One says that you should be spending about 5% of your disposable income on your clothing. I think there are probably some months where I spend a little more and plenty where I spend a little less. Another says that over the course of her life, a woman will spend a full year in front of her closet from age 16 to age 60, just deciding what to wear, which, if that happens to be true, since I am about to hit 60, means that I'm about to embark in the second year of standing in front of my closet. I completely believe that, by the way. And there are so many rules about getting dressed too, like if you haven't worn something in a year, you should get rid of it. Or if you add something to your closet, you should get rid of something else. Or that capsule wardrobes are better, or that you should have a uniform, or. Fortunately, we have Kim France in the world. And Kim is not just a fashion resource for many women, particularly women of my age. She has long been pretty much the fashion resource. As I said at the top of the show, she was at Sassy Magazine, which was basically a feminist take on YM and Seventeen, and talked to teenage girls the way that they actually talk to each other. She was the founding editor of Condé Nast fashion and shopping magazine Lucky, and today she is living the Substack life. Her Substack is called Girls of a Certain Age, and she co-hosts the Everything is Fine podcast with Jennifer Romolini, a series for women on life about navigating this alternately weird and liberating stage that you hit once you hit 40. Kim, it is such a pleasure to have you here.
Oh, well, thank you so much. It's a delight to be here.
So clearly, I've been a fan for a long time, but so are our listeners. They actually love it when we talk about fashion because it's not just a big expense. It can be a really big time suck. How did you come to fashion, and how do you think about getting dressed?
Well, I came to fashion kind of backward. I was always really interested in shopping from the time I was, you know, in middle school on. I really loved clothes and shopping. But I never really considered a career in fashion until I became a magazine editor and had proximity to a fashion department and could really see how all of it was made. When I was at New York Magazine, I helped edit the fashion copy, which got me into some fashion shows and things like that. But it wasn't until I was hired to do Lucky in 1999 that I really sort of became a quote-unquote fashion person. They were looking for somebody to run that magazine who didn't come from the usual sources, who wasn't a typical fashion person. They wanted somebody with a slightly more democratic perspective. So that's how it happened.
And how has that experience, which was a long time ago at this point, how has that sort of shaped your philosophy about getting dressed, if you have a philosophy about getting dressed in the morning?
Well, it's interesting. It shaped my philosophy in one way then, and I think in another way now. When I first got the job, one of the unbelievable things that used to happen when you were the editor-in-chief of a fashion magazine is that you would often get a clothing allowance. So I went out and just bought what I thought I should wear. I bought the clothes, the designer clothes that I thought would gain me entry into that first row at the fashion shows and make me look like I belonged. And after a few years, I realized I really wasn't dressing the way I liked. I really wasn't wearing clothes I liked. I was wearing a costume. And so I started gravitating toward different designers, people like Maria Cornejo and Dries Van Noten, who didn't pay as much attention to trends and made clothes I could wear for years. So that's how it changed then. That's how it was informed then. Now I feel like I really do have a uniform, which is something that I never aspired to, really. And I think a lot of that has to do with the ways that my body has changed in my 50s. I'm 60 now. And realizing that I didn't want to spend that year you talk about. I didn't want to spend all that time just staring into my closet when I knew it's like staring into the refrigerator. You know exactly what's there.
Exactly. But sometimes you have trouble figuring out exactly what goes together. If last night's leftovers go with what you've got in the crisper drawer, or if it's better with mayonnaise or mustard.
Very good analogy. I like that. Because some people are great improvisers. Some people can go into a closet and immediately put together a look that looks amazing with pieces that they maybe haven't worn in a while, or that strange thrift store shirt that has a loud pattern. I'm not one of those people. I need a little assistance. I think that's sort of where so much of the motivation for Lucky came from, because I felt clueless about getting dressed and I wanted to make women feel less clueless about it.
So what has become your uniform as you have gone from your 30s to your 40s to your 50s now to 60?
Button-down shirts. I dress like pretty much a 14-year-old boy. Button-down shirts, jeans and chinos, dresses in the summer, a lot of shirt dresses in the summer. It's a pretty straightforward uniform.
One of the things that I really appreciate about your newsletter is that although you definitely go for quality items, the things that you link to are also somewhat budget friendly, at least if you are the type of person who prefers to buy pieces that you wear for a while. When you are evaluating whether something is worth spending money on, what's your filter?
My filter is, do I want it? Would I wear it? Would I tell a friend in the dressing room that they should buy it? And also just, do I love it? There's that advice about getting dressed, that you really shouldn't buy anything you don't love. And so I really do try to make sure that I have a gut reaction to something, that I'm not just including something because I know it will sell well.
How did you escape the you should wear this, or this is trendy, and make the turn to things that you like you back? I'm thinking of it recently. I think you did a post on long denim skirts, and I've been looking at long denim skirts on other people for a while, as I've noticed that they are coming into popularity. I'm 5'2". I feel like it makes it harder for me to wear a long anything. And so although I've sort of been dipping around the edges of long denim skirts, I have this nagging feeling that it's one of those things I will buy because I'm supposed to buy it, and yet I'll never wear it. How did you escape it? No, I well, thank you. I won't now because you told me not to.
How do I escape that? I think it was when I stopped feeling anxious about getting dressed and started taking some pleasure from getting dressed and shopping and enjoying how clothes allowed me to express myself instead of, like I was saying before, wearing what I thought I should be wearing. And I think that happened as I got to know a little bit more about fashion, did some investigation into designers I like, but it was a gradual thing, I think.
You have now created this brand, this community for women over 40, your newsletter, which, by the way, everybody should subscribe to. The free version is great. The paid version is better. It's called Girls of a Certain Age on Substack. Your podcast is called Everything is Fine. And I have to say, I do gravitate to those magazine and newspaper and blog stories that tell us what we're supposed to do by the age that we hit certain milestones in your 20s and 30s and 40s and 50s. We've written a lot of them on financial terms. I find sometimes I get stuck in what is supposed to be appropriate. My son's getting married this summer, and I had this thing about how I was supposed to buy a dress with sleeves. I was only going to buy a dress with sleeves because I'm going to be 60 and I have 60-year-old arms. And I ended up in a store and I put on a strapless dress and I was like, okay, done. Love it. Bought it.
Great.
Where's your line on appropriate?
I think that a friend of mine once referred to it as listening to your internal radar. Right? It's really paying attention to your gut. And I think we get into a lot of trouble with those lists about what a woman over 40, a woman over 50, even I've seen woman over 30 shouldn't wear. Because anything pretty much can be made to look appropriate. I mean, after a certain age, I don't think a mini skirt does, regardless of what the Real Housewives seem to think. But I think that most things, even like overalls, which I used to really hate and think were just completely inappropriate if you weren't a teenager, I've seen women in their 40s and 50s completely make that look great. So I think it's staying close to your radar. If you don't have good internal radar, if you know that about yourself, one of the suggestions I had when I did a closet editing piece was like, have a friend come over, have a really blunt friend come over so they can help you with that.
It is that piece, actually, that even though I've wanted to have you on the show for a long time, that finally got us to reach out, that piece on editing your closet, because I did think it was so spot on. You said that you get this question a lot, but for people who have not gone through a closet edit in a while, what's the goal? What's the process? How should you approach it?
The goal is to not have that refrigerator feeling, right? Not to have that feeling that I'm looking in my closet and there's absolutely nothing there for me. And also, if, you know, and this is true of a lot of women our age, like if your body has changed and you're not sure if it's going to change back, there are clothes in there probably towards the back that remind you of the body you no longer have. For me, that was a big thing, to no longer have those clothes in my closet taunting me.
How did you go through it? Did you try everything on, or did you sort of sift and sort?
I didn't try on the things that I know I wear all the time. Anything that I hadn't worn in 6 months or a year, I will try on, because you never know how a fit is going to have changed. Yeah, I've heard some people say that you must take just remove all your clothes from your closet, put them all on your bed, and then one by one bring them back. I think that's a little crazy, but I also find that notion very appealing.
I haven't done that, but I'm a frequent editor. I feel like I go through my closet at least sort of once a season, and I tend to get rid of the clothes that just make me feel bad. The ones that I put on and take off and decide they just feel yucky, or the ones that, again, because my body's not the same body that it used to be, that remind me that I'm never going to be that again. And those are often the ones that have to go. But I do have pieces in my closet that I'm a little sentimental about, that I haven't gotten rid of. You're not a big fan of the if you haven't worn it in a year, it has to go rule, right?
I don't like that rule. I think millions of women have gotten rid of things that they probably really liked because of that rule. You know, I think it's a rule that exists because they're for certain pieces that are in your closet that are special pieces. We used to call them excitement pieces, the pieces that don't necessarily go with everything else in your closet. And so they're hard to work. But something about them, unless this was just a mistake, and you know, if it was a mistake and you haven't worn it in a year and there's no part of you that thinks you might, then get rid of it. But if there's something about that piece that you love, like, hang on to it. I also believe in hanging on to clothes that we have sentimental attachment to. And even if we never wear them again, if something brings us pleasure to see in that closet, I think that a little bit of that is okay.
What about those pieces that are expensive? The pieces that we spent a lot of money on that we're not wearing frequently, or we feel like often these, I think, tend to be fashion forward pieces. And I sometimes look at them and feel like with every day that I keep this piece, it is losing resale value.
It's losing resale value. And the unfortunate thing is you get pennies on the dollar most of the places where you resell. You get a little back. And so there is that feeling of like, of comfort in knowing that you got something back. But I don't like the idea of hanging onto a piece just because it was expensive. That's a very tough one, I think, because people are careful about how they spend their money. But a dress you never wear can taunt you in the same way that the clothes that don't fit you anywhere can taunt you and remind you of like a shopping failure. So, you know, there are amazing places that you can donate clothes to, resale stores, get a deduction. I donate stuff to Housing Works. Housing Works really knows what they're doing. They know when they get designer pieces, how to price them and how to benefit their organization the most. And finding a place like that where you can at least feel like you did something good with your mistake. Something good came of your mistake.
Let's address a crucial topic and one of our hot button issues here at Her Money: women outliving their retirement savings. It's a huge problem, but it's one Parity Flex, the multi-year guaranteed annuity available from Gainbridge, is designed to fix. If you're not familiar with annuities, the concept is essentially that you take a chunk of money and turn it into a paycheck that you can start drawing on when you want to, next year or next decade. With guaranteed returns at 5.95% APY, the Parity Flex multi-year guaranteed annuity also features a guaranteed lifetime withdrawal benefit, which ensures a consistent income even if your account balance is zero. And if there's one thing better than a successful retirement, it's a stress-free retirement. Start saving now at Gainbridge.io. Please visit Gainbridge.io/ParityFlex for important information. This is a paid endorsement.
Hey there, I'm Dylan Lewis, one of the hosts of Motley Fool Money. Each weekday on Motley Fool Money, we talk through the business news you need to know and the stories moving stocks on Wall Street. On weekends, we dive into the industries shaping tomorrow and host the experts, authors, and executives that understand them. Tune in for insights, a long-term perspective on investing, and of course, stock ideas. Plenty of them. To quote a listener, it pays to listen. Check us out and subscribe wherever you listen to podcasts.
The global secondhand apparel market is expected to be valued at $350 billion by the year 2027. That's according to data from ThreatUp. That's a rate of growth right now that is three times faster than the apparel market overall. What's your feeling about consignment, about buying secondhand and about selling secondhand? And while you're at it, how about rental?
I am a big fan of consignment. I buy a ton of clothes on The RealReal. Clothing rental seems cool. I've just never seen one. I've never seen a really chic one. And that may be because I'm not fully schooled in the world of clothing rentals. But I don't trust any time an algorithm is supposed to tell me what to wear. I don't trust that you can answer, you know, a column of questions about your style aesthetic and have a computer spit out things that you're actually going to love.
I think that's true. I actually do sell back to The RealReal, which is my favorite store of all the stores. It's my favorite store, in part because I like the feeling of just running a balance on the RealReal. I don't cash out. I just keep the balance running, and it makes me feel like I'm able to buy clothing for free. So now we've got our closets fully cleaned out. We are selling the stuff that we don't want. We're buying consignment. We're saving lots of money. How do you organize your closet to make the choices about what to wear today or tonight less agonizing?
I color code, and I'm not the type of person who color codes. I would not color code my books. I am not an organized person in any way, but I color code my clothes, and I bring, and the clothes that I wear the most are toward the front of the closet. I am not phenomenally organized. I wish I had a really great system to report, but I don't have one.
And when you think about buying something new, when you think about adding to your closet, whether it's shoes or a bag or another item of clothing, how do you decide what's worth it? I mean, are there certain things that you'll spend more money on? Are there certain things that are not worth it? Are there some things that fall closer to that fast fashion category?
If I describe an article of clothing or a bag or a pair of shoes to myself as fun, they may not be a good purchase. If something strikes me as, oh, that's really kind of wild and gets you excited for a brief minute, or it's something that is trendy, I find that those purchases almost never work out for me. I think a lot about what I already own. I like to have a Garanimals approach to dressing. You know, I think that Garanimals for adults is like the great million-dollar idea that hasn't happened.
Agreed.
Because I know so many women who would enjoy that. I mean, when I worked at Condé Nast, I used to really envy the GQ editors because they just wore suits every day. And I always used to think, wouldn't it be great to just... And I know that some of those GQ editors were probably standing in front of their closets like it's the refrigerator, just like we do. But at the time, it seemed very appealing.
And I think some fashion houses have tried that, right? It seems to me like Eileen Fisher kind of tried that. Donna Karan kind of tried that with, these are the six pieces that you absolutely need. I used to love the column in InStyle where they would take six pieces of clothes and put them together in assorted ways so you could see... You could see how they work together, but it would be nice to be able to sort of do that for ourselves. As we look at this world of fashion that is so confounding and yet seems so important in some ways and feels like it has assumed a position of too much importance in others, are there other rules that you fall back on? Are there other things that you tell yourself to make yourself feel better leaving the house each day?
I think the most important thing for me, the most important rule, is that I feel good. There's a pair of jeans that fits me so well, but the waistband is too tight. And I could wear them, and I could walk around all day and wear these jeans that otherwise look great on me. And there's no way I will. I mean, comfort is the most important thing to me at this stage in the game. And that really helps when you're shopping, because you can immediately tell if you can't move in something.
Yeah, absolutely. As you are sort of plotting out your future, I know that you've been working on a memoir. There have been pieces of it in your Substack. What is next? I mean, what else do you want to accomplish in the next decade?
That's such a good question. I mean, I think that professionally, I'm pretty comfortable with where I am. I had a very big job that almost killed me, but didn't kill me, but almost did. And I made a decision after that job that I would never do anything like that again. So professionally, I'm set. I love doing my Substack. I love doing the podcast. Those things are great. I think where I see ambition in myself these days is for my lifestyle, for my health, for travel. There are still a lot of things I want to do. I just don't know how many of them are work-related.
Was it leaving that job that turned that switch in your brain, asking for a friend?
I mean, the day I got fired from that job, I knew. I mean, I cried. It was upsetting. It was humiliating. But I knew. this is the best thing to have happened to me in years. I think there were some parts of the job I was very good at, but I was not good at playing the role of editor-in-chief. And for as long as I was having to do that, I was unhappy. And then the day after I was fired, it was like I started kind of recognizing myself again. I had lost myself in this job, and it didn't take long for me to find myself again.
Well, I've got to say that I'm glad that you did. I'm glad that we're sort of in the same cohort age-wise, because reading you and listening to you gives me a sense of comfort that I am not going to walk out the door and make a big fashion mistake at any point in time. And I just really enjoy it. I enjoy your work, and I've enjoyed this conversation.
Thank you so much. This was great.
If you were going to give our listeners one place that they could find you, where would it be?
I think I would have to say my Substack, which is kimfrance.substack.com.
Okay. We will absolutely send them there in the show notes. Kim, thanks again. Been a pleasure.
No problem, Jean.
Thank you so much for joining me today on Her Money. If you like what you hear, please subscribe to our show at Apple Podcasts. Leave us a review. We love hearing what you think. We'd like to thank our sponsor, Edelman Financial Engines. Her Money is produced by Haley Pascalides. This show is mixed and mastered by CDM Sound Studios. Our music is provided by Video Helper, and our show comes to you through Megaphone. Check out our new podcast, How She Does It with Karen Feinerman, for intimate cocktail party style conversations with today's most talented female leaders. This podcast is also part of the Airwave Media Podcast Network. You can find us and other shows like us at airwavemedia.com. Thanks for joining us, and we'll talk soon.